National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Well, Pope Leo XIV returned this week from his first apostolic journey to Turkey and to Lebanon. It was a significant journey, and this week on Register Radio, we're joined by Elias Turk, the Vatican Rome editor for Asimina, who was there every step of the way with the Holy Father. And then, diocese and many other participants were left in shock at the news that the Christian Brothers Pension Fund has an $800 million shortfall. The Register has been looking into this crisis, and we're joined by Register's Zelda Caldwell and Matt McDonald for all of the details. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio and EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. I'm joined in our Washington, D.C. studios, as always, by Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Shannon, how are you?
Hello, Matthew.
Well, as I was just mentioning, Pope Leo has returned to Rome. He had a memorable newsy press conference, as you described it, flying back from Lebanon to the Eternal City. It's a journey that took him to Turkey and Lebanon. It was a trip that included great calls for unity in church, in the life of the church, and commemorating the Council of Nicaea. It included ecumenical and interreligious outreach, a plea for peace, and especially support for local Christian communities. Among the many Christians eager to welcome the Pope was our own Elias Turk, Vatican Rome editor for Asimina. For those who may not be familiar with Asimina, that is our Middle East North Africa news agency that is based in Erbil. And Elias Turk is one of our great reporters who's based in Rome. Elias, welcome back to Register Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, this was a trip that brought you, as our correspondent, onto the papal plane, but it was also something that was very personal, knowing, as we do, your origins in Lebanon. So let's start with that. How personally significant, how meaningful was this trip for you?
Yeah, I saw this trip as very meaningful because I lived through a few weeks of the war, of the last war between Hezbollah and Israel in 2024. And I had to go back to to Rome, where I live in Rome. And I wasn't able to go back to Lebanon except for last Easter. And then I had to run back to Rome because Pope Francis died. So this was my first time going back to Lebanon after that experience and the fact that I was going on the papal trip and the Pope wanted to preach the gospel of peace was really also, I lived it as an experience of reconciliation and I was seeking inner peace through the Pope's speeches and his gestures in Lebanon.
Yes, Elias, I'm wondering, you know, as Matthew mentioned, unity and peace were sort of the overarching themes of this journey.
Yes.
How does his message of unity land in the Middle East, especially in a country as divided politically and religiously as Lebanon?
Well, Lebanese people at certain points, as it is happening today, do look for inspiration. And I think Pope Leo has offered them this. When he has called them to unity, I think they will hear him. And I think they will believe in themselves again, because the Pope has told them that he believes that it is possible for Lebanon to live in peace and to live in unity. And he has offered also Lebanon as a model of peaceful, of living together in peace for Christians and Muslims, also as a model for the whole world. And I think Lebanese will start believing again in this, especially after all the crises that happened, the war crisis, the economic crisis, inflation. And I think the Pope's message has landed in people's hearts, I think, yeah.
Yeah, let's jump back to his visit to Turkey, in particular, the remarkable outreach that we saw there from Pope Leo to the Orthodox churches in particular.
Yes.
I think of the commemoration of the 1700th anniversary of the Council of Nicaea with the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, but also his meeting with the other Orthodox churches. Can you talk about the significance of that? Because this seemed to be an important moment, especially looking ahead as we are now to 2033 and that very important milestone.
Yeah, because the Pope, when he was leaving the Church of more Ephraim of the Syriac Orthodox Church in Turkey, which is, by the way, the only church that was built in Turkey since around 100 years now. He invited the church, the other church leaders, to walk together to the 2033 Jubilee, to do this spiritual journey, he called it. And I think this also would give the other churches a certain goal to walk to together, especially that, as you know, Matthew, in the last maybe for several years now, some people have started believing that the ecumenical dialogue has reached its limits, and most probably it's not going to go further away or furthermore, and the dialogue won't conduct to a true full communion. And I think that the Pope's visit to Turkey has given fresh hope in that sense, that a full communion is possible, and he has said again that he's fully committed to dialogue with other churches, and he also heard the same message from other church leaders, like the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople, Bartholomew the First. So I believe, yes, the message of unity has is back again, and it's going to go forward very very well, I believe.
Ilias, I'm so interested to know, since you were right there, I mean, what was the atmosphere surrounding Pope Leo, especially in Turkey? You know, how were ordinary citizens, you know, people along the roadways and at these various sites, how were they responding to the Pope?
Okay, so there were, so in this apostolic trip, the difference between Turkey and Lebanon was very clear, because in Turkey there weren't a lot of people actually participating at the events, except for the 4,000 people participating at the Holy Mass at the Volkswagen Arena, which was the Holy Mass that the Pope held on Saturday night for the faithful living in Turkey. But at the other events, there were really very few people. Also at the Patriarchal Church of St. George, the Orthodox Ecumenical Patriarchal Church, it's not a very huge church. The church is relatively small. And as you already know, there are not a lot of Christians in Turkey, and Turkey is huge. So even if the Christians wanted to participate at Istanbul, they would have put a lot of time to arrive. Some of them came on purpose. They took like buses for 10 hours to arrive to the Holy Mass. But this made that the events weren't a lot of people participating. For example, at Iznik, where they celebrated the 1700s, anniversary of Nicaea, there weren't actually a lot of people. There were only the bishops, like almost 100 bishops from the Orthodox and the Catholic Church. While in Lebanon, from the very first moment the Pope arrived to Lebanon, there were a lot of people on the streets. And when the Pope was moving from a place to another during the whole visit, from an event to another, people were also gathering to see the Pope and to participate in the papal events. So because also Lebanon is not a huge country, and Lebanon has much more Christians also compared to Turkey. So this was very noticeable in this sense.
Yeah, and let's talk about that Maronite population in Lebanon, because obviously this was a very important moment for them. But he also, and let's include them, met with all of the patriarchs, the Catholic patriarchs, in the Middle East and the Near East. What was discussed and what were some of the aspirations, the hopes of the patriarchs with this visit?
The patriarchs, the different Catholic and Orthodox patriarchs, are really worried about the situation happening, about what's happening today in Lebanon, because it seems like the ceasefire between Hezbollah and Israel is really fragile, and some people are saying a war might start again in the upcoming weeks. The patriarchs are also worried that a lot of people are leaving the country. So they saw in the Pope's visit as a sort of of a way to convince people to stay and to give them hope and to give them meaning in staying in such a country, because Lebanon has been living very difficult situations in the past decades. So it's not easy also to tell people to stay in these situations. Mm-hmm. So the patriarchs were hoping that the Pope's visit might help people in understand better their role, their mission in the Middle East, in Lebanon, and to believe that there is place for them and there is a future for them in that area. As for what the patriarchs have talked with the Pope in their, because they had lunch with the Pope on Monday after the Pope's meeting with consecrated people. There weren't any official communications about that, so we don't know anything that officially was said or discussed in that lunch.
Right.
It was held as a private lunch and. Yeah,
I'm staying that way.
There wasn't anything. Yeah.
Elias, really briefly, we've only got a minute or so. One of the more impactful moments visually was seeing Pope Leo in visiting and praying at the ruins of the Beirut port explosion. This is the fifth anniversary this year of that terrible tragedy. More than 200 people were killed, 7,000 people were wounded. But can you describe what we witnessed there?
Yeah, so the Pope visited the Beirut port explosion site, and there he stopped for a silent prayer. So he lit a candle and laid down a wreath of red flowers at the site. And he seemed at one point to hold back tears also, because I think he realized how tragic this situation is. And afterward, the Pope spoke with family members of victims, some of whom were holding photographs of their relatives killed in the blast. And some of the family members, they are not all Christians. There are Christians and Muslims. They were talking to him and explaining the situation to him, and some of them started also crying. And this happened right before the Holy Mass at Beirut waterfront. And at the Holy Mass, there were around 100,000 people waiting for the Pope to arrive. And they were streaming, and there was a live streaming of the Pope's event at the Beirut port explosion. So when the Pope was at the port, the people who were gathered for the Mass all of a sudden started also looking, and some of them were also crying. And so it was very, very emotional for all, I think, for all the Lebanese people who were seeing the Pope going there to comfort people and to try to help them and to hug them and to bless them.
Elias, thank you.
Yes.
For that,
thank you very much.
But also
yes.
For your expert reporting throughout. It was a joy to watch, and I know it was an immense amount of work, but thank you on behalf of all of us who followed it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio. Next up, we talk with Zelda Caldwell and Matt McDonald from the Register about the Christian Brothers Pension Fund. Stay tuned to Register Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen here with Shannon Mullen in our DC studios. Well, many people, including dioceses across the United States, were surprised by the shocking news that the Christian Brothers Pension Fund, that had an $800 million shortfall, was going to impact them and a lot of other people. And the Register has been looking into this crisis, and our ace reporters and writers, Zelda Caldwell and Matt McDonald, have been digging into this story. Welcome to both of you.
Glad to be here.
Well, Shannon, let's start with you, because I think, can you give us an overall picture of this story? Because a lot of people's eyes just glaze over when you start getting into how an $800 million shortfall could happen with any pension fund.
Yes, Matthew, I think it's safe to say that there isn't a diocese in the United States, maybe nowhere, that's flush with cash right now. You know, these are tough times for pretty much all dioceses. So this came a little bit of out of left field. We believe that more than a dozen dioceses or so, but also scores of Catholic employers. So we're talking about schools and colleges and other Catholic institutions that employ thousands of employees. Are faced with a real fiscal dilemma. The company that they contract with to manage their pension fund has reported to them a significant shortfall in what's available in the funds and what will be available in its current trajectory compared to what these dioceses and other employers are going to owe their employees when, mm-hmm. when they retire and their current retirees. What does that mean? Well, in some cases, it means that dioceses that were contributing $1 million a year are going to have to come up with another $1 million per year and for 25 consecutive years to make up the difference. Nobody, Zelda and Matt can concur with this, nobody has that kind of reserve.
Right.
So the question is, we'll get into that, is what are these dioceses and employers, what can they do?
Yeah, well, Zelda and Matt, let's turn to you. How did this happen, Matt?
The fund has been around since 1964, managed by Christian Brothers Services. And the firm cites two things. One is the financial crisis of 2008, when the stock market went down significantly. They say they've never really recovered. They were over 100% funded in 2007 before the financial crisis, then got down into the 70s, and now it's at about 66%. To compare, experts say that you want your fund to be at least 80% funded, better if it's closer to 100%, of course, but at least 80% funded to be considered healthy. And they're at about 66% now. They also cite being upside down in terms of not enough active employees contributing. In rough numbers, about 40,000 participants in this plan. Roughly 15,000 are active employees that are paying into the plan. And those are the only participants that the employers are also paying into the plan for currently. You have about 17,000 retirees who are drawing on the plan and therefore not paying into it. And then the rest are people who are not yet receiving the plan but are expected to receive payments sometime in the future. These are separated employees or disabled people.
Matt, we mentioned option one, which is to contribute dramatically more per year. That doesn't seem feasible for any of these clients of this firm. What are the other options that are available to them?
One is you can simply withdraw from the plan. You'll owe a significant penalty if you do that, which is also expensive. Another is to try to run your own plan. And that's something that one expert told me at least three Catholic schools have done recently, and at least two more are considering doing.
Yeah, and Matt, one follow-up. I think the headline in some cases, I'm being facetious here, could be that there is still a pension plan for Catholic employees. I mean, we just don't many employers, you know, have switched to 401ks and similar retirement funds like that. But evidently still a lot of dioceses do use pension funds and they're going to be impacted by this, correct?
Yes, and it's a good point. Most of the Catholic colleges that got back to me, most of the dioceses that got back to me, say they don't have defined benefit pension plans anymore. They use a 403b or 401k, a lump sum payment at retirement.
Yeah, so let's focus again a bit on who exactly is impacted, because it seems like we're talking about a vast number of people.
That's right. It's in some cases, it's priests who are diocesan priests. In a lot of cases, it's lay employees of a diocese or I think the largest number are teachers at Catholic schools and some Catholic colleges, maybe other staff members as well.
Yeah, so we'll bring in Zelda here. Zelda, this has happened before. This kind of thing happens. Pension funds get underfunded, and in some cases it becomes a critical issue, and government regulators might step in some fashion. Evidently, that's not going to happen in this case. How come?
That's because this is what is known as a church pension plan. In 1974, Congress passed the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, also known as ERISA, which was designed to protect people's pension plans, their retirement. If something went wrong, if the employer made a bad investment, they would still have their retirement. Employees in the private sector, employers contribute to a fund called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And when their employees need to be bailed out, when something goes wrong, then the money comes from that fund and people get their retirement benefits. With a church plan, I think the reason they did this is the religious groups and churches did not want the government interfering unduly with their business. There was a carve out, an exemption, so that they don't have to. One thing is they don't have to guarantee their employees any kind of benefits, and they don't even have to send out regular notices to them when something's going wrong with the plan or when it's not being fully funded.
So can we assume that this is one of the reasons why this is coming a bit out of the blue, that we're talking about all the different reasons that this fund was going under, and yet there seemed to be no warning at all that this might happen?
Yeah, and that's what some of the bishops have said, is that the Christian Brothers didn't tell them, but they weren't required by law to do so.
Yeah, so as a follow-up to that, what legal recourse is there in terms of trying to deal with this?
Yes, I spoke to Norman Stein, a law professor at Drexel University, who's an expert on this. He's a consultant with the Pension Rights Center, and he said that the best bet is to sue under state law for a breach of contract. But this is very difficult to do because it's expensive, for one thing. By the time these people, you know, individuals, employees, lose their benefits and then sue, they won't really have the money to sue and to take Christian Brothers or the diocese to court. Another thing is, we don't even know what the plan looks like. The diocese might be some protection where they can't be sued. And the other thing is they have to get together with other people in their states and sue in that state. So there are a lot of challenges to doing that.
Yeah, so it may, at the end of the day, just be up to individual dioceses and individual Catholic entities or those who are impacted to try to solve this on their own.
That's right.
One other question, too, and you may not be able to answer this, any of you. What do we know about other funds that are out there that could be also either underfunded or teetering on the brink of being underfunded?
Well, there's a lot of pension funds that experienced what Christian Brothers Services did, which is they got walloped in 2008, right?
Right.
But, you know, that was 17 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. So you would think that they would have righted themselves by now. I don't know of any particular ones that are serving Catholic dioceses. Matt, you can speak a little bit. You queried all of the dioceses in the United States just to get a little bit of a sense of what they have.
Yeah, the majority of the dioceses and Catholic colleges that responded said that they don't offer any kind of defined benefit pensions. That's like most secular employers, that's something that they've moved away from because they're too expensive, because of these kinds of problems with pensions, actually. And instead, they have a system that's familiar to many people who work for a corporation, which is the employers contribute to a fund, the employee contributes to the fund, and then also these funds are invested in the stock market and in other places. And the hope is that the fund grows to such a point that when the employee retires, that lump sum that he receives at retirement would be substantial.
All right. Well, I know that we'll continue looking into this story and trying to advance it for everybody. Real quick, before we finish up here, I know we want to do a plug.
Yes. As we've spoken about on the show, the Register has an ongoing series about the new Catholic hubs, places around the country where Catholic life is really flourishing. Zelda's written a couple of these. You've got another one that's out on ncregister.com. Where is this hub, Zelda?
It's in Greenville, South Carolina.
All right. So let everybody know, ncregister.com. Greenville, North Carolina is our next hub, right?
Great. Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Well, that's it for Register Radio for this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks so much. Until next week, on behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please, take care, and God bless.